comes, first of all, may I get you to state your name and your number if you know what they are at this time, sir. What is your name and
my phone number?
No, ma'am, we're talking to Mr. Bounds now. We'll call on you at the appropriate time, Mrs. Bounds. Just hold on to the phone, and we will tell you when we wish to speak with you. So just hang on. You have an opportunity to talk to the board. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, my name is Ron Bounds, and my DLC number is 108514.
And I'm sure that your out-of-state number is what, 371350? Is that correct, sir?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Policy, and this morning we have three board members participating in your hearing this morning. They are the Honorable Ms. Dale Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is C.T. Wright. I will be serving as your lead, and I'm also board chair. I believe that we all have had an opportunity to speak with you in the past, and I want to take this opportunity to welcome you again to the Arizona Board of Executive Primacy. Now, what's going to happen this morning, I think you already know this, Mr. Bounds, but I want everybody else to understand what we're going to do. We're going to very briefly offer just a brief statement about Mr. Bounds and what has transpired. And then we will ask, of course, at all times, Mr. Bounds will be able to participate. I don't believe you have an attorney present. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, this is right.
Okay.
I don't have an attorney.
Okay. Therefore, we will be asking Mr. Bounds to respond at appropriate times. And then we will ask his supporters on the phone if they would speak. And then once we hear from his supporters, then we will go to the victims. We will ask the victims to speak. And that will be followed by our coming back to Mr. Bounds, and Mr. Bounds will be invited to make a final statement to the board. After he makes his final statement to the board will go into discussion, and everybody can listen at that time. No one needs to hang up, and we'll go into discussion, and following this discussion, the board will make its determination. I just wanted everybody to know how we will be operating at this particular time. So thank you so very much. So, Mr. Bounds, I show that I believe that you arrived out of state back in 02. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, it was in June of 2002. I came out to Washington State.
Okay, well, you said where you are. I was not going to say where you were located, but since you said it, so we will not make it a secret that you are in Washington State, sir. What I show, sir, is you have been certified by the Department of Corrections in the state of Arizona for a 412B411 hearing. That is, you are being considered to be paroled to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. Okay, what I show is, and my information is not correct, please correct me, sir, that you are currently serving a sentence for first-degree murder, and that sentence began on October 19, 1992, and you became parole eligible on December 19, 2017. And is that correct, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
And the pending sentence, if you're paroled to your next consecutive sentence, which is for attempted first-degree murder, and that is a 16-year sentence that you have there. And so if you are paroled to your next consecutive sentence, you would go from the first sentence, that is A01, to A02, from first-degree murder to murder, attempted to commit murder. So that's what we are here today to talk with you about. As I indicated, sir, the board has had an opportunity to speak with you before. We also have the report from the state of Washington that has been presented, and we will talk about that in just a few moments. And we want to, if they're on the phone, if they can hear us, if they cannot hear us, but we do want to thank those in the state of Washington and the Department of Corrections in the state of Washington for providing Arizona with a comprehensive report in terms of the progress that made, that Mr. Bounds has made. They have been quite cooperative with the in turn the state of Washington, that is, in providing information to the state of Arizona.
I would also point out the fact, and other board members might have some questions about the incident of offense itself, but what I show is that this goes back to 1992. At that time, you and your lady was having some problems. The two of you had decided, or have maybe have not decided, that you were not satisfied, and you started making plans to commit a murder and to depart from the state of Arizona. But I also show that you sold a number of your goods that you had in the state of Arizona, and then among the goods that I show that you sold, that you did apply for a passport, and then you sold your boat, and you sold a truck, and you took cash advances on your credit cards, you stripped your bank accounts, you purchased camping equipment, and then you purchased a police radar detector, and you purchased a gun, and so forth, and then you were planning to depart the state and to go out of state, and then I believe it was on September 29, 1992, the victim returned home, that is the female victim, when she returned home, she opened her garage and her friend, male friend, was there in the garage, and you initially shot that victim, and he did survive, and then you shot the female victim, and she did not survive. She passed away. And at that time, you departed Arizona for Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and your vehicle with stolen license plates, and then once you were there, you left there, you went to the U.S. Virgin Islands, and then on October 19, 1992, you was charged with first-degree murder and attempted murder, and subsequently you were brought back to the state of Arizona, and then you were transferred to the state of Washington. And I grant you that was just a very brief summary, but is most of that information correct, or is it all incorrect? So as it relates, you have an opportunity to talk about it in detail if you so desire, but I just wanted to put that on the record just right up front, sir. So, but you will have an opportunity to discuss it in detail if you so desire at the appropriate time. I do take note that in the state of Washington that you were meeting in custody, and because of where you were at this particular time, you cannot move from a median upward because you were out of state. And I also take note that you have been employed there, and you continue to be employed there, and that the last time you appeared before this board was, I believe, on April 26, 2018, and at that time, this board denied your moving you to your next consecutive sentence. I guess another question I ask, we always ask this because it's usually in the court records. I do show that you had restitution of a little more than $100,000. Have you paid anything on that restitution yet, sir?
Well, there has been some monies paid generally out of what my wages are, but I understand that since my move to Washington, even though they have crime victim compensation and they are taking approximately 20% of any of my wages and earnings, that this does not go towards that restitution. That's what I was informed of at the last hearing.
Right.
But when I was in Arizona, I did out of my wages and what I was earning and any employment I had down there, there was money that was taken out towards that restitution.
So I think my first question to you after that is, what have you done, sir, since you came before this board last year? Because, you know, this board is looking at, you know, the progress that you made, and so we'd just like to know how life has served you almost 12 years. I mean, 12 months, sir. So how's everything been going, and what have you been doing, sir?
Well, I am employed, and I can continue to work in the same position that I was at the last hearing. I work generally as a clerk in a food factory facility here, and do things involving production planning and training other inmates in planning and orienting them to the operation of the food factory. Since my background previous to me being incarcerated, I worked with computer systems, so I had considerable experience in that area. So I also try to mentor and train people in that aspect of the job. I also completed the redemption program that I started in I believe back in December of 2017, I graduated and completed that course. Redemption is just a program that's essentially about finding ways to better deal with how I might react to a situation, that I could better respond and understand that the choices and consequences of my choices affect so many people more than just myself, and it just helped me understand that I needed to take a little more accountability for my actions.
If you could personalize that, sir, do you feel that this particular program has helped you to understand who might have been affected by that incident offense that took place back in 1992? Is it, do you feel that you learned more why this might have happened and how you affected others, whether they be victims or supporters? Have you given any thought to that at all, sir, as a result of the course that you're in, that you're in?
Yes, I have, and I understand that generally, as it relates to what happened and what I did, most of what I was feeling at the time, I directed towards Patty. I blamed Patty for what happened instead of looking at myself and realizing that I was the only person that was making me feel the way that I was feeling about our relationship ending.
Since you mentioned Patty, just for the record, who was Patty and what was your relationship with her, since you referred to her as Patty, sir?
Patty Hardman was my ex-girlfriend that we had been seeing each other for approximately a little more than 2 years. We began our relationship back in January of 1990, and unfortunately that relationship ended around April of 1992. When it ended, obviously, I didn't deal with it very well. The way it ended, I blamed Patty, and I had a lot of anger towards Patty, and again, instead of realizing that however and whatever the reasons were for that relationship ending were, I was ultimately the person mind that was making me feel the way I was about the situation. Even though I might have been hurt by the situation and the circumstances of our relationship ending, I should have understood that she didn't cause me to feel the way I was feeling. It was only me. And what I should have done is, because I obviously was having issues dealing with it, I should have sought more help and somebody to help me deal with it. And I didn't, or at least I didn't do enough to do something that would help me deal with the situation.
Did you discuss it with anyone, you know, any counselor or family members before you took the action that you did, sir?
Well, at the time, as I said, our relationship ended in around April of 1992. I was having problems dealing with it. At the time, my brother was living in Arizona as well. There was a point in time, I think it was mid-May, that I did call my brother and told him I needed help. And he saw that I needed to get some help, so he took me to a crisis center in the Mesa, Arizona. I met with someone there, a counselor. We talked for a brief period of time. I explained to that counselor that I was having trouble after a relationship had ended and couldn't deal with it. And unfortunately at the time, she did ask me, I expressed to her that I had contemplated taking my own life. And she talked to me about that. And we talked briefly. I can't remember exactly everything that we talked about, but at the time, I guess I felt she was more concerned with my getting my insurance coverage information, and I didn't really pursue any follow-up. And my brother was there with me, so he told the counselor that he would be with me for the next couple days and look after me. And after that, I didn't seek any counseling after that until I committed the crime that I did.
You said that those, I guess the counselor, someone was talking to you about your insurance. Why did that come up? Why did the insurance come up, sir?
Well, she just asked me for, she wanted to get my basic information, where I was employed. Like I said, she was asking me for, I guess, insurance information just to, I'm assuming, to get paid for me visiting there. That's why I kind of left there feeling like I thought she was more concerned about getting information for my, as far as for insurance purposes coverage, than really taking the time to help me, I suppose. And again, that's my own insight. I just left there feeling like I was struggling at the time. I left there feeling like no one really cared what I was dealing with. They just cared about, again, getting paid to help me at that time.
So what were you doing between, I mean, your recollection, you've had all these years to reflect on it. Well, what were you doing between, I guess it was April, you know, at that time when you were with your brother, and September when the offense took place itself? So what were you kind of doing during those months, sir? What were going through your mind during that period, sir?
As I said, after our relationship ended, I was struggling to pull myself together and move on with my life. I still had a lot of depression and anger towards Patty about how our relationship ended. At the time, some of my anger kind of developed as a result of, unfortunately, the way that Patty and our relationship began wasn't under the best of circumstances, and I felt that she had done to me what she had done to her ex-husband, meaning she had started seeing someone while we were still in a relationship. And I fixated on this because, as I said, she began apparently this other relationship with Warren rather very soon after our relationship ended, and my belief was, again, at that time, that they had been seeing each other for some period of time before that. And this brought out the anger and the hate that I had for Patty at that time. As a result of that, one of the things that I did was we happened to work at that time at the same place. It was the University of Phoenix. I no longer was working there. Out of my frustration and anger, I turned to some way to hurt her as I felt she had hurt me. So I made up some flyers about her infidelity and placed them at her workplace. Obviously, she was upset by this, and this resulted in her taking out a order of protection or restraining order in June of 1992. From that point forward, I realized that I'd kind of burned any bridges, so to speak, that I've really screwed up, and there's nothing more that obviously that I can do to even try to fix what happened. So I try to resolve to move on with my life, and unfortunately, like I said, I was still having problems. I had trouble going to work. There were times when I wouldn't even go to work at all. I had a habit, unfortunately, especially when I got depressed, I would resort to gambling. So I, on several occasions, took trips to Las Vegas or Laughlin, and many times it was, instead of going to work, I would go there to gamble, just to forget my troubles, I guess, or just get away from things. My brother was in Arizona at the time, as I said. He spent some time with me, but for the most part, after the visit to the crisis center, I had a tendency to isolate myself. So I didn't really stay in touch with him as maybe I should have, and expressed to him that I felt that things weren't changing for me.
Well, I decided that you were going to leave the state of Arizona, so what was on your mind there? I mean, you sold everything, I shouldn't say everything, but you sold many of your personal goods and with the intent of leaving the state of Arizona, so why didn't you make that decision, sir?
Well, by then, you
knew that you were going to commit a murder by then, so why did you decide to leave the state, sir, and go all the way to Florida and then to the U.S. Virgin Islands?
Well, I think that's a little bit of a point of contention there that I would like to address is in September, when you're talking about this, like I said, I had trouble struggling with what was going on. And in August of 92, again, I was trying to pull myself out of this, and I thought that maybe a vacation or trip would help me get past this. And I did discuss this with someone I had started spending time with. And then in September, to get back to selling my property, I'd like to bring up when you mentioned selling my boat. My boat had been for sale for over a year and a half. I had placed auto ads in the boat trader that would have shown clearly that it wasn't a situation where I all of a sudden said I'm going to sell my property. My boat had been for sale for over a year and a half, and it just happened that I sold it in September of that year. As far as the truck that I sold, that was a truck that I used to haul my boat, and I sold it to my brother, but he didn't pay me anything. I just transferred title to him. So, and the truck was only worth about $1,000. It was only a vehicle I used to haul the boat that I had. So I had no need for the truck. He asked me if I didn't need it, would he sell it to me? And I said, sure, you could pay me whenever you want to pay me. So as far as selling my property, my boat, my truck, those are the circumstances that how they took place. It's not as if I all of a sudden decided I'm selling everything and doing this, committing this crime. That's not how it happened. When I withdrew money from my bank account, this happened the first time on the 25th. I think I expressed in my previous hearings that I had talked to a previous employer, Richard Feldman. He had called me about maybe returning to work there. I worked for him years previous. I was currently working at Honeywell at the time. Again, because I had so many problems dealing with the situation surrounding Patty and I's relationship, I thought a change might be something that would be good for me. So I met with him on the 25th of September to talk about going back to work there. Since Richard already, he knew Patty because I used to work there. Somewhere in our discussion, he just happened to ask how she was, and I told him we were no longer together. We concluded our meeting thereafter. I told him I'd get back to him about maybe the opportunities of going to work there. And when I got in my car, I just broke down. Instead of going to work at Honeywell, after that meeting, I went home. And my first inclination was, again, to take another trip to Las Vegas or Laughlin. So that's when I went to the bank and I withdrew, I believe, a couple thousand dollars. I took some cash advances on my credit cards. But when I went back home to get ready to go, instead of going, I just stayed at home. I didn't do anything. I just kind of sat on the couch and did nothing. By that time, sometime later in the evening, I decided it was too late to even try to go there. So instead, I went out and decided to go watch a movie. The movie that I went to see happened to be a new release at the time. It was Unforgiven. And after I saw that movie, I went home. I went to the grocery store and I purchased alcohol. And that's when things started to really fall apart for me. That's when, over the weekend, as you said, I went out and bought some camping gear. I also purchased guns. I continued to drink pretty much on and off over the course of that weekend up till the 29th, which was Tuesday. I believe on Monday, I withdrew some more money from my bank account. Again, thinking maybe I'd go to Vegas, but that thought didn't last long. Obviously, over the weekend, a lot of my thoughts went to how our relationship ended, that I was blaming Patty for everything I was going through, and my thoughts went to I wanted to confront Patty about it, and I realized at that time I can't say that my thoughts never turned to ending Patty's life. This would be untrue. But to conclude that was all I intended is also untrue. I don't think I ever knew what I would do, but I was, obviously, my plan over that weekend was I needed to confront Patty to ask her why things ended the way they did.
Okay. And at the end of the day, I don't mean the day, but over a period of days, you did do that, and the murder and the attempt to commit murder did take place. I just want to jump forward, then I want to go to other board members for questions that they may have. But I just want to put on the record that we do have the report from the state of Washington, and it is dated April 2nd, 2019. And just by way of summary, it does state that this has been a good review period for Mr. Bounds. His behavior has been great, and he has received positive feedback from his job supervisor, Mr. Schofield, and that he was an excellent worker, very polite, and professional. Very good, a CPU system, and work well with co-workers and staff. I just wanted to put that on record that you have received a positive report coming from your counselors there in the state of Washington. And while I'm putting that on the record, I would also want to put on the record that we do have a letter from from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. We do have someone here from that office, but we do have a letter from them dated April 11, 2019 that the board has also received opposing your release, but we'll get to that later. But I just wanted to put that on record. Now, said that all of us had had an opportunity to speak with you before, the three of us. Mr. Neal and I have had an opportunity to speak with you, but this is the first time, I believe, that the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse is having an opportunity to speak with you. I've checked the records, and she was not present in the past, so this is her first time having this opportunity. Therefore, with that being said, I'm going to yield to Mrs. Rittenhouse for any questions that she might have for you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I do have a question. Mr. Bounds, when you bought the guns, what were you intending to do with them?
Well, initially, like I said, I did have thoughts of ending Patty's life. Just a little more background. Back when our relationship ended in April, after I essentially found out that she was now seeing somebody else, I did have a lot of depression I was suffering from. At that time, I bought a gun then. As I said, I contemplated taking my own life.
So what happened to that gun? Where was that gun then?
All those guns were, are you referring to, did the police confiscate them?
All the guns
were in my possession.
Okay, so at the time, you went and bought more guns in addition to the one you already owned.
That's correct.
So did you shoot as a hobby, or?
No.
No, okay.
The reason I bought the guns, at least again at that time in my mind, I went to see the movie Unforgiving. Saturday afternoon, like I said, I had been drinking. I wanted to get out of the house. I just didn't want to be around there anymore. I had some, I believe it was a coupon book on my counter that I received in the mail, I don't know how long ago, but I went through the coupon book looking for something to do, and there happened to be a coupon in there for Shooter's World. And impulsively, I thought, this is what I want to do. I called my brother. I asked him if he would want to go do this with me, and he went to the shooting range with me. After this, I bought a gun. I don't know that I could explain why I bought the gun at the time. I don't really know, because I already had a gun. If my intent, and only my intent was to take Patty's life, I already had the gun. I didn't have to go out and buy more guns to do that. On Sunday, I went out, and as I said, I did buy some camping equipment. When I was purchasing this camping equipment, it happened to be in the same area of the store as where guns were also being sold. There, at that time, I bought a shotgun. And again, understanding my state of mind at the time, I bought it believing that this would be more intimidating, that if, as I said, Patty would not resist me taking her with me, because like I said, my frame of mind at that time was I needed to know why. I needed to understand why a relationship ended. That's what I was thinking, and that's why I bought the shotgun, that if she saw the shotgun, she would not resist and come with me.
So, Mr. Bounds, how many times did you go to the shooting range? I mean, in your whole life, how many times have you been to a shooting range?
Just that one time.
Just that one time. The reason I'm asking is guns are expensive, and they take some knowledge to know about ammunition and, you know, different types of guns are used for different purposes. That's why I'm asking.
When I was younger, I did go hunting with my dad, but I didn't have any guns previous to these three that I purchased personally myself. But I did have prior knowledge of handling guns in the past.
Okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Bonson. Thank you, Dr. A. Okay,
thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Honorable Mr. Neal, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Ray. Mr. Bounds, one of the issues in this, in the original offense was premeditation, how well you planned everything and carried out. How long does it take to get a passport?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How long does it take to get a passport? Because it seems that you got a passport before the murder.
Yes, as I recall, it only took, I went down and applied for the passport, and I received it, again, as I recall, just a couple days later at the time.
Okay, you didn't have a passport card?
No, I did not.
Okay, I haven't had a passport myself, but my understanding was it takes some time, 1 or 2 days. Unless you pay for an expedited passport, but you obviously haven't been out of country before, so you've got a passport.
My dad was retired military when I was younger. I lived in the Philippines.
Okay, but you didn't travel out of country other than as a dependent on the military personnel.
That's correct.
Okay, so but just before the murder you did, and you said that Patty did the same thing to you that she did to her husband, but you didn't turn around and said that you two broke up, and then she started seeing their victim. So I don't quite understand that part of it.
Well, okay.
So what did she do to you that she did to her husband? And the other thing too, was she getting divorced from the husband when you started seeing him?
No, she was not.
Okay.
What I meant by what she did to me, as far as what she did to her ex-husband, is Patty and I had been in a relationship for about 2 years. We had talked about her moving into my home, and in January, the idea was at the time, around January of 1992, she was going to move in. For some reason, about a week into January, she decided she didn't want to move in. She said she still had some unresolved issues she was dealing with, and that maybe we could look into this after her graduation from the University of Phoenix, which was set to take place in March of that year of 1990. I was obviously frustrated. I tried to explain that I didn't understand why she kept delaying us moving forward with our lives. I thought that it had to do with the relationship between her ex-husband and the way our relationship had started, meaning that she had expressed uh, expressed to me that she was in so many words that she was not happy with the way that our relationship had begun. In other words, she said, when they got divorced, I cheated on my husband, this wasn't right, and what frustrated me was that we had talked about this in the beginning when we began our relationship. When we first started seeing each other, I didn't know she was married. As it said,
let's back up for a second. So she was just moving with you in January of 1990?
In January of 1992.
Okay, well, all right. So but she didn't think she decided not to.
She decided.
Subsequently, between January of 1992 and September of 1992, things deteriorated. We weren't happy about it, but apparently some of her allegations about you had to be somewhat substantiated. For you to go, you went in and had a hearing over order of protection, which normally the person who wants the order of protection goes down and applies for it to judge. If it sounds like there's sufficient reason to issue for it, or if the defendant is served, and they have a 15-day period to ask for hearing, and if they ask for hearing, which apparently did, then both parties go in front of the judge, and both parties are there, and the judge listens to both sides, and he makes a determination whether or not to issue the order, and we're hearing that the judge decided to issue order. So I'm trying to, you know, for time's sake, I'm trying to expedite some of this explanation. So then in early 1992, or in September of 92, things deteriorated. You apparently were not doing things that the judge thought were appropriate, and he issued an order of protection against you.
Let me read a little bit of this because
I'm trying to expedite it, and I'm reading from the reports of the court. The court documents, and they indicate that you bought the pistol on the 26th of September at Shootersville, and then you purchased the shotgun at Sports Authority on would be the next day, and you also bought some camping gear, but the camping gear at Sports Authority was about the same day you bought the pistol at Shootersville. Okay, so anyway, that's some indication that you knew something was going to happen. Your explanation of the shotgun indicates that you made that decision in a very short period of time. Then go back to, I'm asking you about your boat. You said your boat's been sold for a year and a half. When you sold it, coincidentally, close to the time of the murder, did you sell for the price you had it for a year and a half, or did you lower the price so you could sell it?
No, I sold it for the price I was asking.
Okay. That's a point of curiosity. So that then, according to the reports, the money you took out of your accounts, starting in September, you took 28 tax grants on a visa on the 24th. On the 25th, you also took $1,000 out of your checking account. 3 days later, you took $2,000 from your credit account, and that was the day before the murder. And on the day of the murder, you took $4,000 from your credit union account. But this is my curiosity. I mean, the documents are there. It's obvious you put all that money out leading up to the murder, and that's probably why they were able to convince a jury that it was, or to convince people that it was premeditation. But when you're arrested by the customs people, you had $13,000 in your pocket, but you also had receipts for having spent almost $1,000 for lodging. Where did that money come from?
Most of the money was, like I said, from my bank accounts and from cash advances on my credit cards.
Well, but all of that only came up to $10,000 when you spent $1,000, so that's, you know, my master was $9,000, and there's $4,000 or $5,000 more that you have, and that's So where did that extra money come out? Because there's no documentation that you would have had to spend what you spent in Virgin Islands and getting there and everything else. You would have had, oh, I don't know, maybe $20,000 when you left the country. So where did that money come from?
Well, the boat was sold for $10,000.
Okay. Well, if that's where it came from, that's where it came from. That's the easy answer.
I sold the boat. I was asking $10,000 for the boat, and that in addition to the money I had in my bank account and the cash advances was the money.
What day did you sell the boat?
I couldn't tell you the day. It might have been sometime in mid-September.
Okay. All right. Going back to the day of the incident, the time of the incident, you were there at the residence waiting for her to come home, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and so when she came home, you took a shotgun and a pistol into the victim's garage, shot him, and then shot her. That to me doesn't indicate that you had any intention of talking to her about anything.
I understand. What happened was, as you said, I was there when I saw car lights coming up the road. I was parked across the road from the home where Lauren was living. And to backtrack on that a little bit, just so you understand how I knew where she was living. Back in April, when our relationship ended, I was still hoping to work things out with Patty, and we were members of the same gym. After she had told me that she wanted to get on with her life and I needed to get on with mine, I was still hoping we could work things out, so I waited outside the gym for her. I couldn't bring myself to approach her, but then I saw her leave, but she went in the opposite direction from her home, and I followed her. So to understand how I knew where she was, that's how I knew where she was going. Anyway, I saw the car lights coming down the road. I started my car. I remember starting my car. And just as I started my car, I noticed someone walking out of the garage. And I lost it at that point. And that's when I ran in, probably to around the front entrance of the garage, and I shot the person in the garage, which ended up being Lauren, and I fired at and into the Ford Bronco that Patty was driving.
So you shot, according to Dr. T, a very excellent engineer on my his opinion was that you fired you shot him with a shotgun, and then you shot him with a pistol. So I understand if you got a shotgun in this state, they come with a device that is going to put three rounds and two of the children one in a shotgun. So why did you pull the trigger the third time, sir? Why did you take out the pistol? To me, that sounds like a calculated move to guarantee the death of the person you shot with a shotgun.
Well, when I had a sports jacket on, I had the shotgun in my hand, I had a lanyard on it around my shoulder. like I said, I shot the person in the garage, Lauren, first, and then I fired a shotgun into the Bronco. I never saw Patty in the Bronco, but I obviously I felt she was still there when I shot the gun. I don't know why I had the pistol in my, as I recall, in my pants, in like tucked into my pants, and I probably just let the shotgun drop because it was around my shoulder, and I pulled the pistol out and I fired that into the Bronco as well. That's my recollection of how it happened. You have to understand, at the time I I'm not saying this is any excuse, and it doesn't make me any less responsible, that I had been drinking a lot, and I just wasn't thinking. When I saw Lauren come out of the garage, I think all the anger and everything kind of overtook me, and at that point, it wasn't a matter of approaching her, Patty, about why our relationship ended the way it was. It was just the anger and the hate and the jealousy that took over at that point.
Okay, thank you, sir. I will say that I've dealt a lot with a lot of circumstances in my career where people were jilted lovers, had a lot of anger, drank a lot, and they ended up in jail for beating up the other person. They ended up in jail for taking a sledgehammer to their car and breaking the windows and all kinds of things, but they very, very, very few of them ended up in jail because they killed the person they had the problem with. But
I understand. I purchased the guns, and that's obviously made it.
Yeah, my problem with all this is there was a lot of indication that you planned to do something serious and then flee the country. Well, thank you, sir. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. DeMille. Okay, at this time we are going to go to supporters for Mr. Bounds, and I believe the first one that I will ask to speak would be Mrs. Bounds. I don't have a first name. Mrs. Bounds, his mother. Mrs. Bounds, are you still on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. At this time, would you state your full name and tell the board what you would like to tell the board this morning, ma'am?
Yes, my name is Gloria Bounds, and I want to express to Patty's family that I can't even imagine what her family is going through after the loss of her loved one. And I just hope that they can, over the years, that they've endured this pain.
You have to speak to the board and not to the family. So please speak to the board. You make your point, so that's why I let you continue. But please go ahead and speak to the board. So what do you want to tell the board?
I would like them to consider giving Ronnie the opportunity for something better than in his life in prison. I would like him to be able to have a life after prison. He could come home to my family. And I just want to express for Patty's family, I just have no words for it. I'm deeply sorry that this ever happened.
Yes, ma'am. Is that your statement? Any question by board members? I do want to ask you one question, Mrs. Bounds. Did you know Patty's family prior to that? Were you acquainted with the family?
No, I wasn't. I've met Patty, but I never met her family. Okay. But I have a family that I know.
Yes, ma'am.
That they're going to.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, and thank you for your participation in this hearing this morning.
Will he consider what I've asked, that he could be given the opportunity for something better in his life than prison?
Well, this is not the time to discuss that, but I am going to make a comment since you asked. For the purpose of this hearing, we cannot consider that because he's been certified to be considered to move to his next consecutive sentence, which means that he's currently serving the one for the murder, but he also has a second one attempted to commit murder. Therefore, he would not be permitted, if this board decided to move him to his next consecutive sentence, he would not come home today with you. So that would not be something that we could do at this time legally in the state of Arizona, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Is there anyone else supporter for Mr. Bounds? Any other supporters on the forum or in the room? I don't see any others. Therefore,
well, my husband is an assisted living facility.
Okay, well, we do understand, yes, ma'am, and we hope that he will be doing just fine. And so I'm going to ask you to remain quiet at this time, Ms. Bound, but please stay on the phone, and we're going to continue with the hearing. And as I stated up front, at this time, we're going to the victims, and I don't know who want to come forward first, the victim services or the attorney.
If you could start with Carol on the phone.
Okay, on the phone, I've been told that Carol on the phone, Ms. Shane, will be the first one to speak. Are you still on the phone, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Okay, now would you state your name and tell the board what you would like to tell the board at this time?
Yes, my name is Gloria
Dean
Bounds, and I
just... Mrs. Bounds, you're talking to Mrs. Shane now, so you're giving you a so I'm asking Mrs. Shane to
her
at this time. Yes, ma'am. Okay, yes. Mrs. Shane, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Carol. My name is Carol Jean Shane, and I am Patty Hardman's sister.
And what would you like to tell the board now?
I've prepared a statement, and I would like to read it at this time, if that's okay?
Yes, ma'am. That's perfect.
Okay. So I'll begin by saying good morning to the Board of Clemency. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today to remind you of my sister, Patty, her family and friends who love and miss her each and every day, Anne and Lauren, who survived the night of senseless violence that took Patty's life. I'm speaking to you, members of the board, because the man who brought this destruction is asking for the chance, this devastation, is asking for the chance to move forward with his next sentence and ultimate freedom. I'm grateful for the previous denials and ask the same message be delivered today. Please continue the life sentence. There has been no evidence that I am aware of that he has had any therapeutic intervention, domestic violence education, to say that he would not resort to the same behavior that is proving itself to be his true character under stress and rage. Please hear this again. His coping strategy was to destroy the object of his stress with a carefully constructed plan of premeditated cold calculation. He needed to kill what he could not control. It does not appear that he is being truthful here at all and accepting any responsibility for his actions. Instead, we must come here year after year and thus far listen to his rambling misrepresentation of the actual facts. This man has been in a structured and restricted environment where he is not been tested, hence having the ability to be a model prisoner. I do not for 1 minute trust who he would be and what he would do in the real world with the information I have so far. Please do not take a chance with another life. All the things he said he would like to do when free, he can do in some capacity within the prison system, maybe talk to others about the devastating effects of domestic violence on the lives of everyone it touches. That when you lose your freedom, you lose your freedom when you take a life. In the kindest way, Patty asked only to be free, to live her life in a way that was best for her. We all have that right. And after more than fair consideration, after being stopped, tormented, and frightened for her life, came the realization that it did not include a relationship with him. And he took her life. He shot the man she had come to care for and who cared for her right before her eyes, then turned his gun on her, trapped in her car, ended her life. He made his choice and gave Patty none, gave us none. I have yet to hear any remorse for him sentencing Lauren to a life of physical and emotional pain for the sorrow this brought to his family. For us all to relive that night, each year now, when life as we knew it to be, forever, never more. I wish he would waive his right to be free and accept what he has done. Please hear this. I will be here, whether in person or by phone, every year to ask if there is any sincerity in his words for us to heal, that he stay in prison of his own making. I ask you, the board, to please continue the life sentence and deny any parole. And please consider not having the next hearing for at least 1 year. Thank you. And though we carry on, find strength in our memories, each other, and in the good we can still do in the world, the facts of that night are clear. The pain is fierce. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you so very much for your wonderful statement. And at this time, do you have any questions at this time, Ms. Shane? There are no questions. Thank you. Please feel free to stay on the phone, ma'am. And when do we go next? Please come forward, sir. And please state your name for the record, sir. Yes, sir. And what do you want to tell the board, sir?
I've attached my statement from last year to this statement to keep it part of the record. I know you have it, so I won't read it again. I'll just mention that I talked about how happy Patty was and so excited about the future. We loved each other so much. She loved my young daughters, and they loved her. They loved being together. My little girls were so traumatized by Patty being murdered. I talked about months of harassment and Patty being so afraid of Ron Bounds. Patty and I started dating after she received her bachelor's degree from the University of Phoenix. What Ron's delusions are about us dating before they broke up are completely a lie. I started dating her after she received her bachelor's degree from the University of Phoenix. I mentioned that just after a couple dates, Patty told me an ex-boyfriend was harassing her. She was very scared, and she wanted me to know about it. Ron's harassment escalated after Patty and I started dating. She needed to have phone calls screened at work. Ron put disgusting flyers about Patty on the cars of her coworkers. And he ruined her car by pouring sugar in the gas tank when it was parked in front of my house. No proof, but we firmly believe that. None of my neighbors with cars parked outside had sugar poured in their gas tanks. Patty and her ex-husband were on good terms. Fortunately, he had a Ford Bronco she could use. She was killed in the Ford Bronco. I talked about us feeling so helpless and not knowing what to do. I mentioned that after Patty was murdered, I served many years on the Board of Sojourner Center to help victims of domestic violence, and I served many years on the Governance Commission to Prevent Violence Against Women. As the judge, Daniel Barker, stated when sentencing Ron Bounds, domestic violence is a plague, and this is an indication of domestic violence at its worst. I so agree. I've seen so many victims of this violence, so many women and so many children, and I've heard so many tragic stories, such horrible and heartbreaking tragedies caused by domestic violence. Today, I want to address the attempt of Ron Bounds to deceive you in the prior two hearings with his absolutely blatant and appalling lies. You asked him what the purpose was for accumulating all that cash. His response, quickly after him starting to talk about it, was that he had a gambling problem. And then he did ramble on about his gambling problem. He's trying to make you believe that he withdrew all his money from his bank accounts, maxed out on cash advances on his credit cards, because of a gambling problem. He didn't do this because of a gambling problem. I firmly believe he's never done this before, where he's taken all this money out of his bank accounts and maxed out on cash advances. He's never done that before. He won't tell you that he withdrew all his money from his bank accounts, maxed out on his cash advances on the credit cards, and spent up to the limit on his credit cards to buy guns, camping equipment, and other supplies as part of his elaborate and meticulous plan to kill Patty and escape. He knew he'd never pay off those credit cards. And how is trashing his house factoring into this gambling problem? He didn't just throw a chair across the room or turn over a table. He completely trashed that house. Paint was thrown on the walls. Furnishings were thrown and broken. He used a fireplace poker to punch holes in the drywall. Water from his upstairs water bed soaked through the ceiling and onto the floor because of the slack. Papers were burned on the floor. The bathroom was trashed. The countertop in the kitchen was literally ripped off and thrown on the floor. He didn't trash his house because he was going gambling and which would return home later. He trashed his house because he knew he'd never be going back to that house. After over 25 years, all of us deserve to hear the truth. You, the Board of Executive Clemency, demand to hear the truth from Ron Bounds. Ron Bounds has been lying to you. Then you asked him about the camping equipment. He said he planned to make Patty go camping with him and explain why she didn't want to be his girlfriend anymore. A statement from her best friend at work describes how Patty had cried many times in her friend's office about trying to be kind to Ron in ending the relationship, but he refused to accept it. She became terrified of him. Ending the relationship became a nightmare for Patty because he made clear that ending the relationship was not her decision to make. Her friend stated to the judge that Patty asked her a few times after describing what he had said and done, "You don't think Ron would do anything to hurt me, do you?" Her friend stated how frightened Patty was. The truth is that there was absolutely no attempt whatsoever to kidnap Patty. That is an absolute lie. He didn't just lose it. That's a lie. He didn't just lose it. This was completely planned. A friend stated that to the judge that Patty asked for her a few times after describing what he had said and done, "You don't think he'd hurt me, do you?" Her friend saw how frightened Patty was. The truth is that there was absolutely no attempt whatsoever to kidnap Patty. According to a statement from my neighbor, the car my neighbor saw speed away immediately after my neighbor heard the shots had been parked out in front of my house for a while before Patty arrived. I waved to her as she was driving into the garage and walked up to the driver's side door. I turned to get out of the way so she could open the door, and I heard someone running up my driveway. As I'm turning to see who's running up my driveway, bang! He shot me the moment he got to my garage. It was a direct hit. The four doctors and interns who saved my life in the ER told me when I was in recovery that my arm saved my life. The buckshot hit my left side and some exited out my back. If my arm had not been exactly where it was, the buckshot that nearly blew my arm off would have been a direct hit to my heart. I'm sure it looked like a kill shot to Ron Bounds. He even stated in his journal that he thought he killed me. The main ER doctor said he was very close to deciding to amputate my arm. If Ron Bounds had intended to kidnap Patty, but ended up murdering her instead, think about what his first entry in his journal would be. It certainly should be something like, "Oh my God, how could things have gone so wrong? I only meant to kidnap Patty, but I killed her." He didn't write anything like that. The first thing he wrote was, "It's done." That's not what he'd say if his plan went horribly wrong. That's what he'd say if what he did was executed exactly according to plan. And then he wrote about how easy it was. The journal is so disturbing. Ron Bounds is trying to deceive you. The camping equipment was part of his plan to kill Patty and escape. He knew he couldn't stay in hotels or motels because they'd ask for identification, license plate number or something, and he needed to only use cash. His next lie to you was that he only meant to intimidate us with the shotgun, and he even mentioned that today. Again, there was absolutely no attempt whatsoever to intimidate us. A 9mm pistol pointed at Patty and me would certainly intimidate us. He didn't need a shotgun. He definitely didn't need a loaded shotgun. And he didn't need a shotgun loaded with double-aught buckshot. You don't load a shotgun with double-aught buckshot to intimidate someone. You load it with double-aught buckshot to kill someone. As I said, he shot me the moment he entered my garage. The shotgun blast thrust me back to where I ended up in front of the Ford Bronco. I was lying on the garage floor, feeling indescribable pain with my back feeling like it's on fire, and trying just to make myself take a breath. I heard Patty scream, and then bang. He shot her immediately after shooting me. He did not try to kidnap her. I trust that you're already so offended and shocked by his attempt to deceive you. The Board of Executive Clemency, even after being in prison for over 25 years, but I need to tell you about the three escape cars and the map showing where to drive from Phoenix to Florida. The three escape cars and the map make it crystal clear that he is lying to you. He didn't just suddenly lose it. The car used to commit the murder had a stolen license plate on it. The second escape car was parked in a Walgreens parking lot at Rummer and Elm School, which is about a mile from the house. This happened at about 8 o'clock in the evening. I'm sure Patty would have been yelling as loud as she could the moment he tried to transfer her to a different car in a parking lot where there would still be many people around. The third escape car was parked in a Holiday Inn parking lot in East Mesa, which was his personal car that he drove to Florida. The three escape cars were parked many miles away from each other. That certainly took a lot of effort to do that. Just imagine him getting these cars positioned miles away from each other as part of his escape plan. Accumulating as much cash as possible, buying camping equipment, buying the guns, and positioning three escape cars many miles away from each other were part of his very meticulous plan to kill Patty and escape. Again, the first thing he wrote in his journal is, "It's done." He said that because everything happened just the way he planned it. And of course, he mentioned feeling quite surprised by how easy it was. What he also wrote right before being captured is also extremely disturbing, where he again admitted to deciding to kill her. But if she had said or done something different, he might have decided not to kill her. His attempt to deceive you with his appalling lies goes way beyond being extremely disturbing. For us, it's so scary because his lies are a very clear sign to us that he's still a very dangerous man. For the months of terrifying Patty before killing her, for all the time and effort Ron Bounds devoted to planning the most premeditated murder that four police officers ever investigated in their entire careers in law enforcement, and for his appalling attempt to deceive you with lies instead of telling the truth, I respectfully ask that you please deny parole. The police officers submitted written statements. One of them, Amy Anderson, is here today. They were the primary investigators in this crime. Please don't give them the ability to kill again. Please don't take the risk of endangering anyone else's life at the hands of Ron Bounds and enabling him to cause even more unbearable grief than he has already caused. The risk in releasing him back into society is too much to accept. If you're not fully convinced that Ron Bounds will not hurt or murder anyone else if he is released, then please deny parole. I trust that you're not convinced, because Ron Bounds has been lying to you. One can be remorseful when being truthful, but how can one truly be remorseful when saying such appalling lies? There are so many victims of the very painful sadness caused by Ron Bounds in this horrible crime. We would love to have Patty in our lives today. We're begging you to please deny parole for Ron Bounds. We loved Patty so much. And we have no problem with being here every year to keep this very dangerous man in prison. And I respectfully request that you do not allow another hearing for at least 1 year. Thank you for the opportunity to let you know how we feel about this.
Thank you so very much. Any questions? What number?
I just have one question. Were the girls at your house when this happened?
They were there the night before I started. And that's something that I mentioned before, is that he didn't know when my daughters were there or not, and they would run into the garage to greet Patty. There was a lot of buckshot in that kitchen door. Okay. My girls could have run out if they had been there. I would like to give this.
Yes, sir. This will be made a part of the record, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Any further questions? Thank you, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Would you state your name for the record?
Tom D. Anderson.
And, officer, what would you like to share with the board today, sir?
In 1992, when this occurred, I was in the Homicide Bureau of the Chandler PD, and I was assigned the case. As a normal practice, you're calling when we respond to the scene. I came to the house, Lauren's house, and it was a very ugly crime scene, and I won't be too descriptive, but I could see where Mr. Kirkcotty was hit and how he crawled back in the house and called 911. Ms. Harvey was treated in the garage, in the driveway, and transported to the hospital via helicopter as well as Mr. Kirkcotty. In examining the crime scene, I could see that around the spine, over the front hood of the Bronco, there was residue from the shotgun blast, and there's an expended shotgun casing in the garage floor. So common sense fired around, ejected it, and was spun on the car. Well, the shotgun wasn't probably that far from the glass, and Ms. Harvey took the hit right here, and I would think, you know, what was the last seconds of her life, what she witnessed, and what much terror was in the last seconds of her life. She was shot in the shoulder, she fell to the right, into the passenger seat. Some of the slugs came out of the front of her chest, went through her wrist, and when she fell over, she was shot a second time with a 9mm Glock in the back. So what I'm working with seeing with my partners, the phone started ringing, because Channel 12 News was covering, it was early in the evening, before 10 o'clock. And it was Patty's co-workers and friends calling the PD and getting a hold of the detectives at the scene. We know who did it. Which, you know, it snowballed from there. We identified him, Mr. Bounds, as a suspect. We subsequently searched a search warrant that night at his house. Mr. Kirkcaldy described as being trashed, which is an accurate description. We identified the owner, BMW, in the musician, a company car from Honeywell. So we weren't really sure where he was or where the vehicle was, because when we saw the warrants, there was no vehicles there. A day or two later, maybe the next day or the day after the Walgreens, we found the Honeywell company car, and it had stolen license plates on it, and we removed the plates. The lab made them on fingerprints on the back side of the license plate. There were bank account statements in the car that we served warrants on, and we identified the liquidation of assets. We guesstimated around $20,000, as I recall. So at that point, there's another day or two, we found another vehicle in the parking lot that Holiday Inn that he had rented from a local car rental facility. So the BMW was gone. We couldn't find it. And we entered that information at NCIC, the felony vehicle. And after about a week, the Deputy County Attorney Sandler, Jeff Sandler, sent me to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and we got an unlawful flight warrant from the U.S. Attorney, and so the FBI could get involved in the search. About 3 weeks later, we got a call from the FBI field office in St. Thomas that they had him. And they began the interview with him, and he disclosed that the BMW was the Fort Lauderdale Airport parking lot. And shortly after that, he declined to make any further statements to law enforcement. We flew down to Fort Lauderdale. We called Broward County Homicide and found the car secured in a warehouse. We flew down there and served warrants on it. From the shotgun, the Glock 17 and a 38 revolver handgun. We found a road atlas map, and he had taken a highlighter and mapped his route from Arizona on I-10 to Florida. We found a police radio scanner to pick up radio frequencies from PD. We don't really know where that was tied in. So we bring him home and send him down to DPS lab and have the shotgun tested against the casing. And Bill Morris was the head criminalist at that time. It was a positive match. That shotgun fired that round. And the 9mm removed from Ms. Harden's body was a positive match to the Glock 17. When they did take him in custody, it took about 2 or 3 weeks to get the extradition documents over because of being territorial against the country. I flew down there with 2 sheriff's deputies to get him, and we had a diary. And Mr. Kirkcaldy's accurate in his description of what's in it. To take it a step further, we sent the diary to handwriting experts and it verified and validated that Mr. Bounds did in fact write that diary. And nowhere in there does he ever show any remorse. I always thought, you know, when this case got filed, when I went to the grand jury, that it was indicted for the first degree murder. This is a potential death case. And issues that I've been privy to, that Ms. Harden's mother, you know, was the one responsible in dealing with victim services, the plea rape agreement. There was a reason I saw it funny that he didn't plead just guilty, he didn't tell the judge he did it. He pled no contest and he didn't have to address the judge. So I never saw any remorse from this man. And I would oppose any release of this man.
Thank you so much, Mr. Anderson. Any questions for him?
No.
Thank you so much for coming and sharing this with us.
You could
look at that
on the phone.
Okay. On the phone, sir, are you ready to come? Are you still on the phone? Mr. Peterson, are you still on the phone, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Would you state your name and share with the board what you would like to tell the board this morning?
I am Douglas Peterson. I am the brother of Patty Peterson Hardman. And I would first like to thank the board today for its time and to, again, hear my plea and the plea of the people impacted by this horrific crime to deny the parole request of Ronald Bounds. It's going to be kind of hard for me to find words that would say anything beyond this passionate plea that my sister Carol put out there, and the heartfelt, deep hurt of what the real facts were suffered by my friend Lauren. It's just going to be hard to say more, but I will add a couple of things. One, that Patty was such a happy kid. all of her life. She joked around with her friends, got silly together. The things her and her sisters used to do would make anybody just crack up. And she went from being this happy soul all of her life to knowing at a point she had to get out of this abusive relationship. She went from that to fear, so much so to get a restraining order. She went from that hard part of things to then getting some semblance of happiness again. It was enriched by what she found in Laura, and those two were so happy together, and you could just know that by everything that was around them. But then came these moments of agony when Ronald Bounds burst into their personal garage, and then it's been described by the victims, but in Ronald Bounds' own written words, it's done. And it just doesn't get more premeditated than that. And pulling out my records of this, I took out the newspaper, the Phoenix Gazette, from October 7, 1994. And this is two full years after this gruesome incident. There's a quote in there, and it reads, "I've been in hellish places in my life, Vietnam, Korea. But to sit here and have to make a plea for my son is worse. It's hell. But son, he broke the law." Those were the words from Jerry Bounds, Ronald's father. Ronald Bounds' family knew it then, and they know it now. He broke the law in about the worst way that you possibly can do. I heard, too, that Lauren quoted something, and that quote is actually in this very same paper, in the very same story on the front page. But I'm going to say it again. We live in a time when domestic violence is a plague. This is an example of domestic violence at its worst. And that was said by Judge Daniel Barker of the Maricopa County Superior Court. I'd like to add that if Ronald Bounds is released, I would fear for the lives of my family, my friends, and myself. Clearly, he has no control over his emotions, and I have no doubt that he would be seeking retribution for those who ruined his life, just as he did when he decided that Patty and Lauren would be having to pay for ruining his life. His lies, self-pity, and repeated attempts at parole say to me that he has no remorse whatsoever, only self-interest. Revenge is in his DNA, and I don't think he can really get rid of that easy. I concur with Lauren that Ronald Bounds was then and is now still a very dangerous man. If Ronald Bounds wants to show remorse, he will admit his crime and accept his life sentence. Perhaps even help others who perhaps it is not too late to suffer the consequences of this hideous, violent crime. Catch him early, as they say. He must do that from inside prison, though. Anything on the outside, in my mind, will just send a message and send a signal that one can get away with murder if they play the system right. All of us have had to endure the anguish and expense of these hearings. I'm not out there today, and I do feel bad for not being there side by side with Lauren. I will be there next year for sure, should it come to that. But my wishes are that Ronald Bounds would waive his right to any further parole hearings and accept that he gave up his right to freedom and a life after prison when he premeditated and carried out this crime. Make no mistake, though. As I said, I will be there year on year, and I will make my plea to you, the Board of Executive Clemency, in each and every instance when a hearing does occur, whether in person or by phone. I will be here to be the voice for little Patty and to stand side by side with Lauren. Parole just cannot be allowed to happen. In closing, I pray to the board for a minimum one-year set-off until the next possibility of a parole hearing would be, or longer if allowed under the law, now or in the future. Respectfully, again, I am Douglas Peterson, brother to Patty Peterson Hardman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any questions, board members? There are no questions. Thank you so very much, and please feel free to stay on the phone as we will continue this hearing.
Well, thank you.
Is there anyone else that wish to speak before the county attorney?
No. Lance, and I'm a deputy county attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
Welcome to the board, sir.
Thank you, sir. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office did submit a letter. I know that Dr. Wright referenced that in his remarks. I will not go over the facts. I think that those have been well documented on both sides. What I would like to begin by addressing is there was talk earlier about the restitution that was initially involved in this case. It's my understanding that the restitution order at the time was approximately $100,000. When an inmate is in the Arizona Department of Corrections, by statute, the Arizona Department of Corrections can place essentially a lien on any of the money that's placed on their books or that they earn while they're incarcerated, and a percentage of that money is then directed towards the victims via restitution. However, since Mr. Bounds is under special circumstance in a different state, it's my understanding from talking with Victim Services that the mechanism that the Arizona Department of Corrections uses is not applicable to his situation. So while he was incarcerated in the Arizona Department of Corrections from 1994 to approximately 2002, there was restitution that was taken out of his books and provided to the victim. However, since he has been out of state, that mechanism that the Arizona Department of Corrections uses has not been implemented in this case. In speaking with Victim Services, I believe that they are going to follow up with the Washington Department of Corrections and inquire as to any mechanisms that Washington may have for acquiring restitution and providing that to Arizona. But at this point, Mr. Bounds is currently not paying restitution to any of the victims. I'm struck in listening to Mr. Bounds' statements in his deep-seated self-pity, even at this point nearly 27 years later, and the fact that he still continues to blame everybody else and any other circumstances for what occurred in this case. First, it was the counselor. The counselor cared about insurance, so he blames the counselor for not providing him with what he sought. He blames employment. He blames Honeywell. He blames alcohol. And lastly, and perhaps most upsetting to all those involved, he blames the victims in this case, both Lauren and Patty. Still to this day, he blames the victims for this horrible, horrible crime. Domestic violence is a plague, as many people have said. It's also about power and control. And when Mr. Bounds lost the power and control that he had over Patty Hartman, he resorted to anger and violence. And eventually, an extensive, premeditated plan to commit this murder and the elaborate cover-up that followed. And for those reasons, Mr. Bounds still represents a danger to the community. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office requests this board deny any parole to Mr. Bounds and provide a one-year set-off for any future parole hearings. Thank you for your time and are there any questions?
Thank you. Questions? Thank you so very much for coming in. Wonderful statement. Victim Services, anyone else? Thank you so very much. Mr. Bounds, we're coming to the end of your hearing. However, as I stated up front, we do protocol allow you at this point to make a final statement to the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination. So at this time, sir, we're going to turn it over to you. We will ask that you not repeat what you've already told the board, but otherwise we're prepared to listen to you at this time, sir.
Thank you. The anger and jealousy I felt at the time and what consumed me led me to do something I'll always regret, and I must live with that for the rest of my life. At that time for me, it was a hopeless feeling to have someone that once shared in the same dream of a life together no longer a part of it. guy's relationship ended. I had problems accepting it and responded in hateful ways that ultimately took Patty from this world. I can't bring Patty back or lessen the pain and loss I've caused to her family and loved ones for all the years that have passed or the years still to come. I can't change any of this as much as I wish I could. Or place blame or fault on anyone but myself. But the terrible things that I did doesn't have to define me, nor does it make me who I am. I attempted to live a life before my crime by doing what was right and giving back. And in my life since, I've tried to do the same. I can never right the terrible wrong that took Patty's life. But I know I can still make something right out of my life and what I've done. And I will continue to work on changing the one person I can. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so very much, sir. At this time, the board has run into discussion. In keeping with the open meeting law of the state of Arizona, the discussion will be done in public. We do nothing behind closed doors. We do not discuss this case or any other case behind closed doors. We do not discuss it among ourselves, except for when we sit here, and we're somewhat here. Therefore, we're going to ask that everyone would remain quiet, as it may sound as if we're talking to you, but we're not. Just the three of us talking among ourselves. So now the board is in discussion. This is a very emotional hearing. Let me start off with the positive from my perspective. And I should also say that we as board members, we speak as individuals, not on behalf of each other. I will take note that based on information from the state of Washington presented to this board or sent to this board dated April 2nd, 2019, does point out the fact that Mr. Bounds has received a good review. However, he remains in minimum custody because he is out of state. Having said that, as one board member, I cannot forget the offense itself. I cannot forget the victims. I cannot forget the hardship that has been imposed on the victims and those who we may never know who they are who've been. I also cannot forget, in my opinion, this is an opinion, the hardship of Mr. Bounds' family, his mother and his father in the house at this time, his father that is. However, as I reflect, and I believe this is at least my third time listening to him, some things are always different each time. By the same token, still not clear to me as one board member why he committed this crime, why he prepared for it, because it seemed to me that he had prepared from April through September to carry out this offense. He carried it out. First degree murder on his ex-fiancee, second degree murder upon her friend at that particular time who has come before this board today. Therefore, at this particular time, this is one board member. I'm not in favor of paroling him to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge, but I am prepared at this time to listen to other board members the Honorable Ms. Gail Woodhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Today is my first time meeting Mr. Bounds, and I am also glad to hear that he's doing well where he is, because it just doesn't serve anyone to be a troublemaker. And I think I'm glad that he is doing well and has a good job there in the prison. But in all of my experience on the board, which is nowhere near as long as your experience on the board, I have never seen a case where there was so much planning and pre-calculation to commit this crime. And I just can't reconcile the story that I hear from him today for the first time with what I'm reading in the official reports. So I also would not be in favor of the poll, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. I'm going to steal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. This is, I think, my second time hearing it, and it is, I want to keep it as brief as I can. And one thing I would like to say, I hear this repeatedly in these types of cases, and that's that the desire for the inmate, not only him, but his family, lying back on the whole one to live life and everything else. But one thing that keeps being overlooked is the padding that a sentence was sentenced to eternity with no chance of parole ever. I don't want to pronounce the name wrong, and Richard, but Mr. Kirkbite?
Okay.
He was sentenced to a lifetime of memory, and I don't know how his injuries healed, whether he's got disabilities or pain, but there's some mental scarring that will never ever go away. You can't get rid of that. So those issues are hard to raise sometimes. But to me, this is very cold and calculated, and my experience, I've been dealing with a lot of domestic violence situations, and it truly is a matter of control, authority and control. And when the control is lost, the premeditation starts. And it may not be premeditated all the way to murder, but it's premeditated is what the person who lost control is going to do to the person that caused them to lose control. And I'm hearing that from Mr. Brown when he talks. We tried very hard to deny it and go the other direction, but people that are insisting on controlling in these domestic violence cases are calculating people, and they're violent people, and I just didn't, I can't bring myself to consider parole tonight for the second sentence, which would bring Mr. Bounds closer to a possible meeting with an actual release, and I just am not in favor of that at all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. At this time, any other discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to offer a motion at this time, and my motion would be very simple, and that is to deny Mr. Bounds, ADC number 108514, or Washington State number 371350, to deny move parole to his next consecutive sentence and absolute discharge, as well as a request for a 1-year set off, because this offense took place in 1992. Is to deny and a 1-year set off in my motion.
A second.
Motion by myself, C.T. Wright, seconded by the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse, agreed by the Honorable Ms. DeNeal. As I indicated, we are requesting a 1-year set off, which means that he will be certified in about a year to come before this board again, and that is in keeping us as far as we can go in the state of Arizona based upon legislation in the state of Arizona. Release type denied is 412B, 411. Reasons for the denial: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant behavior, trauma to the victim, and I should say victims, serious and bodily injury, which is demonstrated yesterday, multi-victims, and victim harassment, and anything else that any board member wishes to include at this time. Mr. Bowles, you broke the decision of this board. This board has voted unanimously to deny you your 412 B-411, that is parole to your next consecutive sentence, absolute discharge. The board has also made a set off of 1 year, which means that you will be certified by the Department of Correction to appear before this board again in possibly 1 year from now, not an exact date. Do I need to repeat any reasons why we denied you today, sir?
No, sir.
Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much, Ms. Bounds, for your participation and your professionalism. I want to thank your supporter, your mother in particular. I want to thank the victims for taking time out of their busy schedule, because I know it must be an emotional situation for them. Also, I want to thank the county attorney for your participation, as well as victim services here at the Department of Corrections in this great state of Arizona. This will end the hearing. Thank you so very much.